It's a Ben Fred Friday, meaning we have in studio at ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, Ben Fredrickson of the St. Louis Post-Dispatch and STLToday.com. As always, we're brought to you exclusively by Henderson and Watercutty, and see their services, couple of St. Louis guys calling St. Louis home, helping out folks in Missouri and Illinois, STLCriminalDefense.com, STLCriminalDefense.com. Good morning, Ben. How are you?
Good morning. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday. We are about a week away from the start of spring training, and I guess everybody's pretty much ready to go, aren't we?
Pretty much. Pack up the truck, send it down. Winter warm-up is kind of the unofficial kickoff, and basically the way it works now is as soon as guys leave winter warm-up, it's like most of them are headed down. It seems like guys show up earlier and earlier, and a lot of guys live there now, so it really, I don't know that there's an official start point as much as, you know, you have the pitchers and catchers report, but it seems like everybody's already there by then. So, yeah, I'll be coming down at the end of spring training. I know you'll beat me there, and you'll probably be back by the time I get down there, but I usually go toward the end, but we'll have guys there for the Post-Dispatch super early. Seems like it's earlier every year, but it's that time again, man.
It is. What are you looking forward to in spring training?
Well, there's some obvious ones. I mean, left field, that competition I think is going to be a daily must-see who's trending up in that direction. I think Tyler O'Neill's probably leading the race there to begin. What happens to change that? Who can jump over him? What does Dylan Carlson do? I mean, he's got to force the issue here. And I think if he does, then I wouldn't be surprised to see him be the guy. But I think Tyler O'Neill is the guy they point to and say, hey, it's yours until somebody takes it from you. Go prove it.
Why, though? I mean, Dylan Carlson, to me, is the guy. I mean, if he's the player that we all expect him to be and you don't go down the road of Chris Bryant and hold back service time, he's got to be the guy, right?
Well, I think that very well could be the case. And I don't think the Cardinals would, if he's the obvious answer, the best option, I don't think the Cardinals would hesitate to bring him up. Really, the Cardinals, to their credit, they don't monkey around service time. I mean, look at Jordan Hicks. And it's,
Alex,
I guess, kind of different with a pitcher, but
Michael,
if they have
Waka,
a guy that can help them, they tend to bring him up.
Yeah.
So I think that would be the case here. I do think they're going to put some obstacles in his way to make him have to jump over people. And that's the right thing to do. If you think about, you know, if you tell all these players, hey, you're going to get your shot if you keep doing the right thing. Well, if that's the truth, then guys like Tyler O'Neill and Lane Thomas have earned the right to get first crack at it. Now, if Carlson outperforms him so much that it's obvious, then he should get that job. If Tyler O'Neill can't stay healthy, and we've seen no signs to suggest that he can, then he's gonna lose it to a guy like Lane Thomas. I'd like to see what Lane Thomas can do.
I mean, this guy
raked last year in hard positions. I mean, he was coming in off the bench, hitting. He's fast. He can play all the different positions. My question is this: what if the Cardinals get down there for that left field competition and they find out that they have two, maybe even three guys who are better than what they have in center and right field? Because if it's really a competition and the goal is to play the best players, then it shouldn't be limited to left field. If you have, if your best outfielders, if two of them are competing for left field, then you should find a way to play them across the outfield, not just send one down to Memphis. So I think that's the way it will start. Tyler O'Neill, Lane Thomas, followed by Dylan Carlson. But Dylan Carlson, absolutely, I think the Cardinals want to see him jump over guys.
The Cincinnati Reds are certainly interesting. They signed Nicholas Castellanos this last week. They've signed Mike Moustakas. They have a outfielder coming in from overseas that they believe is
an
on-base.
He hits like 300 with 20 homers in the Japanese League.
And an on-base machine. Yep. They've got good pitching. Cardinals will open up with the Reds. It'll be cold, man, at the Great American Ballpark. I think it's March 26th, opening day of the season. But
it'll be a strained oblique game.
Yeah, probably. And that's just the announcers. But I'm telling you,
you'll,
man,
you'll be in shape, dog. You'll be ready.
I hope so.
You'll have a McCarver Red scarf on.
I've been trying to get them to do a McCarver Red scarf for a giveaway.
Oh,
and
I would
it hasn't
be first
worked
in
yet.
Line. I'd
I
be
would
first
too.
In line.
I think it
Those
would go
great.
Well. Well. But the Reds
swap the coonskin cap for the McCarver.
I like the coonskin cap too. I picked one up for
you get both of those.
I picked one up for the winter warm up. Anyway, I think the Reds right now have made themselves formidable. The Cubs, they have the Chris Bryant situation. The Pirates, it's an awful situation. Milwaukee, I think, will be sneaky. They've had some kind of under the radar moves that I like. But the Reds are the team right now that has made the most moves and spent the most money, and sometimes that does have a trickle-down effect of excitement, I think, in camp, and it carries over to the regular season. We'll see.
Oh, they're by far the most exciting team this offseason. And that's, you know, gets back to winning the offseason and what does it really matter, blah, 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 blah. Well, what matters is they're a better team. And they attacked their weakness, which was kind of oddly their offense, which we usually think of the opposite in Cincinnati.
Especially in that ballpark.
But that rotation was really good last year. They've added to it with Wade Miley. You throw in, you know, Trevor Bauer, who I think will be better this year there. And if that staff can miss bats, if those guys can get strikeouts, then they're going to be good. Now, I don't know that their defense is going to be very good because they've got Castellanos, who's like one of the worst corner outfielders in all of baseball. And now they're going to play Moustakas at second. And you and I were talking about this the other day, and you said, well, they just shift. And they can make up for a lot of flaws that way. But their defense is going to be a question mark. But if the pitchers can strike guys out, these dudes should hit. I mean, Moustakas, I'll give him credit, man. When the Cardinals were going with the Jed Jerko route, I looked at Moustakas' numbers. I looked at Jerko's numbers. I said, I don't really see a proven upgrade here. And then Jed fell off, and Moustakas got better. I mean, he had his career-best OPS last year in Milwaukee, sometimes playing at second base, which he showed he can do a little bit. I thought the Cardinals should go after him for third. I thought that would have been a more realistic
left-handed bat too
upgrade at third base than this Nolan Arenado stuff, which maybe they can pull a rabbit out of their hat there. But instead, they go back to Carpenter. But they've got some serious offense in that lineup. You look at just the what they've taken away from the Central too, because they've taken Moustakas from the Brewers, and now they got Castellanos, who, I mean, dude, he just lit the world on fire.
He's a doubles machine.
Cranks doubles. His defense isn't good, but, you know, that's a decent trade-off for if he's going to provide that kind of offense. What he did in the division was remarkable after he left Detroit. I think he was fired up by not being on a terrible team, and he'll feel the same energy playing for the Reds. So you just take those two kind of proven commodities at the plate, and then you throw in the wild card of the outfielder. They've got an upgrade there, and I don't think Joey Votto will be as bad as he was last year.
We don't even talk about Joey Votto.
That's the thing, is he had kind of like a Matt Carpenter year. Not as bad, but for him it was bad. I don't think he's just going to dry up into a shell and be a husk of himself. I think he's going to be better. Now, will he be Joey Votto in his prime? Maybe not. Maybe that's past. But he's going to be better. As long as Joey Votto can stand and swing, he will find a way to compete. And I think he'll bounce back. And then, they've got Eugenio Suarez, who crushes home runs. And now he's got a deeper lineup. He'll see better pitches if he can get over that pool injury that he suffered. I don't know what happened. What happened there? Did you see that? He tweaked his shoulder in a swimming pool.
But he had surgery, too.
He must have been celebrating the addition of Castellanos.
Maybe
or something.
So.
Or doing something that maybe he doesn't want to get out there. Seems to be that kind of year for those injuries. But they're dangerous. Lineup is dangerous, and there's rotation. Their rotation's dangerous.
You can understand why fans, Cardinal fans, look at the Reds and see what they're doing, and the Cardinals have a glaring need to improve their offense, and they're saying, well, we're going to go with what we got. Ozuna leaves. Do you truly believe that the Cardinals are done right now going into opening day in terms of adding offense to the roster?
I wouldn't be surprised if they take this team into opening day. I think the Arenado thing remains like a big question mark. I mean, we know the Cardinals are interested there. We know those discussions have happened. There's kind of a next chapter that's waiting to play out here, and it's what happens at spring training. Because, you know, I think the Rockies shopped him. They didn't get the crazy big offers they hoped for, so they came back and said, hey, we're done. We're tabling it. He's our third baseman. And Arenado says, not so fast. I'm going to let it be known to the world that I don't have a respect for my general manager, and I feel disrespected by him and the team. Well, you've seen this over the years. This happens to certain players. What usually happens next? The guy gets moved. I mean, it's hard for an organization to keep a player who has openly kind of publicly said, yeah, I'm feuding with the team. We've seen even smaller instances turn into a guy getting traded. Now, it doesn't mean the Rockies are going to take a bad deal for him, and it doesn't mean that they feel like they have to do it. But a lot of this is going to depend at spring. If at spring training he shows up and he's a happy camper, no pun intended, then I think maybe they say, okay, you know, we're going to go win, and then they start to win. Everything can kind of lose some of the intensity that it has now. But if he shows up at spring with a black cloud over his head and he's popping off every time he's asked about it, and then they start to lose, I mean, you could see a deal go down before the trade deadline. You could see a deal go down at the trade deadline. If they're not competitive and their star player is at odds with the team, then that sounds like a trade deadline deal. So I could see that happening. In terms of, I think, in terms of what the Cardinals do, I don't think they feel like they have to do anything. And I think they're serious when they say that. And to people who say, well, they're bluffing. Okay, let's look at what they've done this offseason. The season ended. Bill DeWitt said, we're not really going to increase payroll much. The Cardinals said, we would think it would be great if Osuna would be back, but we're really not going to chase him. We like these young guys. We do feel like we need to, you know, increase the depth of our pitching. Well, what have they done? They went and got Sungwang Kim, the guy from Korea. They have done nothing to – they really did nothing to keep Ozuna. They didn't even match the qualifying offer, more or less, $200,000. And they're banking on these young guys. So they haven't increased payroll. I mean, they've said – to their credit, they've said exactly what they're going to do. They can't be accused of saying things and then not doing them. They can't really be accused of mixed messages. Everything they've said has been pretty much what they've followed through and done. So, yeah, I think they're fine showing up at spring and saying, hey, we're going to roll with these young guys and we're going to give them a chance to play. And if we figure out that our offense doesn't come through, then we'll make some changes as we go here. But I don't feel like they feel like they have to go into spring training with a different lineup than what they have now. And it is scary. I'm not saying I think this is a great idea. I did a thing earlier a couple weeks ago, I guess, where I looked at the average OPS of, you know, the National League lineup spots 1 through 5. And the Cardinals have 3 guys returning that put up numbers that were qualified to be in those spots last year. And then you look at the teams that made the playoffs, the National League teams, non-Cardinals that made the playoffs, they've got 2. So the lineup is a huge question. And I think the Cardinals know it. I think fans are right to say, hey, you know, we don't feel good about this. But what the Cardinals are saying is, look, not every guy is going to be as bad as he was last year. And we think that things are going to click more with Jeff Albert, who's a huge story of this offense this upcoming season. And we think that, you know, we'll be a deeper lineup, even if we don't have the, you know, one guy doing the bulk of the lifting. I think they think Goldschmidt will be better. I think they think Carpenter can bounce back. But, you know, what you're hearing there is a lot of ifs and a lot of hopes. And this was the one part of the team that lagged. I mean, you hope they pitch as well as they did last year. You hope they run the bases. You hope their defense stands up like it did. Because all those things are going to have to be as good, if not better, with what this lineup is that we see today.
I'm fascinated what the lineup may look like. You know, who hits behind Goldschmidt? Who's leading off? Where's Wong? Where's Fowler? Where's Lane Thomas? Yeah. You know, Carpenter? I don't know. If somebody said to me right now today, make the 1 through 8, I'm not sure I know where anybody would go. And that includes Goldschmidt. I might put Goldschmidt at 4. And not at 3. I mean, all those things are on the table right now, I think, when you look at the Cardinals.
That's not a good thing, right? I mean, you should have kind of a framework. And I understand what Mike Schilt is saying, where he's saying, look, it's, you know, it's ideally you have a lineup where everybody can hit everywhere. Well, that's kind of like the phrase where you say you have 3 quarterbacks. You don't really. You have 3 guys who can't be a 1. And I think that's kind of the question of this lineup now is why can't we look at it and say, this is where this guy hits? Maybe they put Tyler O'Neill at 4, you know, and have him and just bank on him being that bopper. But again, you're talking about some really unproven guys having a lot of at-bats in key situations if things stand as they are right now. I mean, Tyler O'Neill has had the most of that group, and he hasn't had very many. His slugging percentage dropped by a landslide last season, about the same amount of bats. Lane Thomas has played hardly nothing. Carlson has not debuted. Didn't even get called up last year on the playoff roster. So it's one thing to ask those guys to come up and perform. It's another thing to ask those guys to come up and hit in the meat of the lineup, in the top half, and carry those expectations and not, you know, not fall short under that kind of pressure. So there's a lot of pressure. There's a lot of hope. There's a lot of just stress on this lineup before they've even showed up at spring training. And, you know, compare that to what's happening in Cincinnati, where those guys are walking this spring going, man, we're going to rake. So that's the difference right now. But again, and I'll stress this, and people say, well, you're carrying their water, whatever. You know, don't confuse a lineup or solely offense with the team. Because if that was the case, the Cardinals would have never made the postseason last year. They wouldn't have finished first. They wouldn't have got to the NLCS. And clearly we saw how their flawed offense got them quickly swept out of the NLCS. But also they had the fewest errors in baseball. They had a top five ERA in rotation. They had a top five ERA in bullpen. They ran the bases as well as any team out there. So I think, you know, this idea that the Cardinals have to have this juggernaut of an offense, I'm not buying that. They need to be able to score runs. They need to be better. But they also, I don't think they need to be the best hitting team in baseball because they do a lot of other things really well. But they need to be better than they were last year. And I don't know right now that you can say they are better than they were last year.
It's Ben Fred Fridays presented by Henderson and Watercutty. So what else are you interested in going forward here with spring training?
Well, we hit on left field. I think the Carlos Martinez situation is always fascinating. He had such a bad spring last year just in terms of, like, unpredictable. And that's what Carlos is, like, the worst word. You just want him to be regular. You want him to make his starts. You don't want him to be, you don't want to be asking, is Carlos going to make his start today? Is on the main field or the backfield? What's going on? You just want him to show up and do exactly what the schedule says. And I thought at winter warm-up he looked pretty good. I mean, he looks physically strong and stout and has said saying all the right things. So that spot, you know, that can he grab that spot? I do think there's kind of a gravitational pull for him toward the closer role because the Cardinals value that and also know he can do it. So that will be interesting to see if they show their hand a little bit more there. How well does he have to pitch for him not to kind of get pulled back to that spot? And if he does grab the spot in the rotation, I'm fascinated by who kind of emerges as the first shot at closer. I don't think, you know, that of all the things I'm worried about with this team, that's not one of them. And I get emails and people tweet and say, well, when are you going to call him out for not having a closer? Well, look at all the guys who could do that job. They're everywhere. I mean, Gallegos could do it. Junior Fernandez could do it. I think John Brebbia could do it from time to time. Ryan Helsley could do it. I mean, you can go through the list of guys who—
Andrew Miller.
Sure, he's done it. And he doesn't have to do it the whole season. Have a guy grab it, hold it while he's hot, and when he's not, cycle him. These guys have done a good job, and I think some of it does come from Andrew Miller, of not getting completely overwhelmed or consumed with where do I pitch and when. They just pitch. John Brebbia's like that, and as he's become a more entrenched part of the bullpen, I think guys have kind of learned from him. They just go when the phone rings. And I think that's a modern bullpen. A modern bullpen is not guys going, I pitch the seventh, I pitch the sixth. No, they pitch when asked. And they don't associate it with their ego or their identity. They just, their job is to pitch when they're asked. So I think that's gonna be a benefit for this bullpen. And then sometime after the All-Star break, hopefully, if everything goes okay, you'll get Hicks back. And I don't know if he jumps right back in. It'll probably depend on how well they're doing it, how well they are at that role. But he could be a factor in this halfway through the season. So I'm not too worried about that. The other thing too, and I haven't heard him mentioned as much, is you know, we talk a lot about Matt Carpenter. Curious to see how he rebounds. That's an obvious. I'm interested to see about Justin Williams. Because he's kind of mentioned as almost, I don't want to say like a throwaway in the left field competition, but either sometimes he's mentioned and sometimes he's not. And then you hear some people say, hey, don't count this guy out. He might be kind of the sleeper in this race. He's left-handed. We haven't seen much of him. He set himself back last year. I wonder if he could become a name that kind of emerges in this conversation.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com. A full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400. 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. Well, let's jump into some other things here. That's a lot of baseball. We'll talk a lot of baseball next week on the weekend eve of spring training. You were covering the NHL this last weekend in St. Louis with the All-Star game. Just your takeaway from what you saw, what the response was from the NHL, how the city performed, and then hockey in general, all those things. What did you take away?
Great weekend. And I thought, I don't think years from now we will remember that the Pacific Division won the All-Star game, but we'll remember the All-Star weekend in St. Louis, and the NHL is going to remember its All-Star weekend in St. Louis. The FanFest event, I believe, sold more tickets in pre-sale than had ever been sold in the history of the event.
I was told, by the way, the FanFest was double the numbers that have ever been at a FanFest.
Yeah.
And people, they, I don't know if they necessarily weren't expecting it, but they said people just kept coming and coming and coming, and the NHL was just floored by what they saw, which is great.
Yeah, I was over there the day of the All-Star game, so Saturday, and it was like you couldn't move. I mean, in a good way. You go to see the Stanley Cup, and people are waiting 4.5, 5 hours to take their photo with the cup. And it's not like people standing around looking at their watch going, oh, my God, this is – they were happily waiting and celebrating as soon as they got up there, cheering for each other when they got up there. It was pretty special. I think that one of the people at the Blues told me the league usually operates that at a negative, like a cost negative, just as a, you know, kind of a fun thing for people who can't necessarily go to the games. And they, you know, like made money on it this year because they had so many people showing up and buying the tickets for it. So you had that. Everything was sold out. And the weather wasn't great, but still it didn't stop Blues fans from turning out. The skills competition, I thought, and I've not been to an NHL All-Star game before, I thought the skills competition was actually cooler than the game. It was more interactive. There was, I think, more entertaining. The women's 3-on-3 was awesome because they were, it was USA versus Canada, and they were going after it. The players... getting to see the players enjoy it was really fun. The Tkachuk angle was really cool. You know, the Blues alumni, I think, kind of made the event. And I think that really showed what St. Louis can offer that a lot of cities don't have. Because, you know, Hull, McInnes, you know, all those guys, Bernie Federico, those guys were there and involved. And I think it kind of said, hey, this is unique about St. Louis, which was pretty special. And then seeing guys like, you know, for me it was cool to see David Perron. Because here's a guy who's on his third stint with the Blues, never been an All-Star. He's got his kid with them, you know, at the skills competition. His kid's getting, being able to enjoy it. That was a pretty neat thing. So, great weekend. I wish the Blues would have, the Blues team would have played longer into the All-Star game. But, you know, those things are so weird. I actually think as they continue to try to make that game more entertaining, that's one thing they have to look at. And Gary Bettman kind of mentioned maybe they do some sort of like an international competition to the All-Star game, where if they could get USA versus Canada or something like that, I think that would be a lot more interesting. But the game, it was probably a little bit disappointing just in terms of, you know, I thought the skills competition was so much more fun, but the weekend itself was outstanding.
Yeah, I think it's really opened up for people that maybe didn't even know after the Stanley Cup run. And I mean, it opened up the eyes of hockey fans everywhere that St. Louis has become really a hotbed for hockey for young kids. I've said this time and again that, and I was with a Blues alumni, I guess it was on Monday, and I said, you know what, we're going to sit here in 16, 17 years and talk about a wave of young kids that are going to be top picks in the NHL draft. And I mean, we've already had that. We had five in that 1 year, but it's going to be even more so, because and scholarships and things of that nature, because of all the buzz around the Stanley Cup, and kids all of a sudden play the game and they say, this is a great game. I love playing. I mean, if you ever played hockey, it is so much fun, so much fun. And now we have all the facilities to be able to accommodate these kids to play. There's sheets of ice all over town. I just think it really has opened up the eyes. The Stanley Cup run, now the All-Star game, the Tkachuk angle, the fact that we've got a lot of young kids that are from St. Louis in the league, that this is becoming kind of the American hotbed of hockey right now, and it's in the middle of the country. It's crazy.
Well, I think hockey is also starting to realize that. I think that the NHL is going to keep finding reasons to be around St. Louis and send the Blues to things, whether it's the 21 Winter Classic, we'll see. I think there's a lot of people who think the Blues could be playing that game in Minnesota. You know, the Sports Commission just submitted, or will by the end of the month submit like a series of bids for upcoming NCAA tournament events, and one of the ones they're going for is to bring the Frozen Four back, which I know it was a hit the last time the men's Frozen Four was here, but imagine if it came now. I mean, with all of the people who are now, you know, so tuned into hockey. But you're right. I mean, the kid who lives across the street from me every day is out in his driveway with his net and his ball and his, you know, his stick, and he's shooting at the goal before he goes to ice hockey practice. And it's every day. I mean, it used to be you'd hear the kid across the street shooting baskets And now it's the kid across the street, you know, playing street hockey. And it's absolutely had an effect. There are players on this Blues team who, if you ask them what it means to them, that there are kids out there picking up the sport because of them, because of what they did, they will tell you it's part of their greatest achievement, you know, in that run they made last season. But, you know, it's going to be a team that kind of altered the way we view hockey, though altered the way that youth is involved in it, and it's going to be that Blues bump, and we haven't even really seen it yet, but we think we've seen a rise, certainly.
Well, I think,
but it's going to come bigger. It's going to be bigger than what we can imagine, I think.
Well, we saw it, and I credit Brett Hall, and that's the wave of these kids now that are coming through right now. And for those of us that were around that when he was at his, you know, pinnacle, it changed hockey in St. Louis. There is no other way to look at it. And I think that building is up downtown because of Brett Hall. I mean, you couldn't go anywhere at that point in time, and people weren't talking about the Blues. Now, they were fun because they were making trades right and left, and they had characters and all those things. But Brett Hall was the character of all characters, and young kids got involved because Brett Hall was pounding the puck and scoring 86, and people were going nuts.
It's a shame he's toned down since then.
Really is. Yeah,
I wish he would bring up some of that energy back.
I mean, we all went blue.
Did you see the video of him on the bench during the All-Star game?
Just
where
giving
he's chirping
it to guys.
O'Reilly. I've never seen a good player with a red stick. It's like, oh, I was dying. Because he used to use a red stick at one point in his career. But anyway, you're right. And that's the thing, too, is and as much as the Blues alumni are such a catalyst for this team, you also have to remember these guys playing now, they did something no one else ever did. I mean, they got to the mountaintop.
Right.
And I think that's when we talk about Pietrangelo and what happens next for him, you have to factor that in. And I know that's not analytics, and I know that's more heart than numbers, but that does mean something. To have the captain who lifted the Stanley Cup for the Blues for the first time, and what it would mean to keep him as long as he's playing like he is now, which is, oh, by the way, it's his career best season. I don't know, man. I haven't really seen from Justin Falk anything that screams that he's the replacement for Alex Pietrangelo. And maybe it's, you know, maybe it's Colton Parayko who steps into that role down the line. Or I'm not saying the Blues don't have candidates for a captain at all. That's not what I'm saying. But there is something that would be important about having him as long as he's playing at a high level, and he's playing at the highest level of his career right now. So where do you factor that into the calculus of the salary cap? He's deserved a lot of money. He's only made more this season with how he's played, but I would just hate to see how they've played on this run, to see him removed from it, because I don't know that you'll like where it goes.
I would totally agree with that. We'll wrap it up with this. Jordan Goodwin picks up point number 1,000 a couple of nights ago. As Travis Ford told me on the podcast that we do weekly, he said he basically made it the point of emphasis when he was named the SLU coach, I have to get this kid no matter what. He and Hassan French are our cornerstone guys to build around, and that young man has not disappointed. I mean, he is turned into a leader. They say he works harder than anybody. He kind of leads the way by example. And already he's had a hell of a career. It's been a great run for Jordan Goodwin. And right now the Billikens are hanging around enough to be in the conversation.
They got to get another big win.
Yes, they do.
And then they got to avoid the blowouts against teams they should beat. But in terms of Jordan, remarkable. I love that he did it in a game where he had more rebounds than points, because that's just what he does, man. He's an aggressive guard who goes after the ball. I love that he had it in an overtime game on a three-pointer that was huge for them to get a win. That's fitting. And I think we've seen him grow up, man. His energy, his competitiveness, his willingness to lead when it's not easy, I think those are all things we've seen develop. And remember, too, this is a guy who he's overcome some adversity at SLU. I mean, it could have been easy for him to transfer after what he went through with the investigation and the accusations and all this stuff. He didn't do that. He took his medicine. He you know, said this is what I did wrong, and this is what I didn't do wrong, and I'm going to continue to be a part of this team. We don't see that in college basketball anymore, man. A guy gets some adversity, whether it's playing time or something off the court, or he doesn't, you know, like the way something's received, and he just leaves, and he goes and finds somewhere else, and it happens all the time. He said, no, I'm staying, and look at what he's doing now. And the best is yet to come. I mean,
yeah.
This team, no matter what happens this year, this team should be much better next year. And they still got a lot to play for this year. So it's been really fun to watch him grow. Really fun to watch his game grow and also just his leadership and his impact on the program.
Henderson and Watercutty, a proud sponsor of ScoopsWithDannyMac.com, a full-service criminal defense firm dedicated to helping individuals fight criminal charges in Missouri and Illinois. State, federal, municipal courts, think Henderson, Watercutty. Protecting your rights, defending your freedom. Number to call, 314-645-4400, 314-645-4400. Visit their website, stlcriminaldefense.com. All right, my man. Thank you, and we'll catch you up next Friday as we always do.
Happy 20th, by the way.
Oh, man, I wanted to ask you about that, and I'll just do it right now. 20th anniversary of Greatest Show on Turf was yesterday when the Rams beat the Titans. Mike Jones, the tackle.
Yeah, awesome.
Man, 20 years. Where were you 20 years ago? Do you remember watching that game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I mean, I was a fan of that Rams team. My dad had grew up in Sedalia, as longtime listeners of the podcast know. Grew up in Sedalia. My dad had a friend who lived in, one of his friends from college lived in Troy, Missouri, and had season tickets. So we would come. And you know, I used to have a pair of those, you know, those French fry noodles, like the yellow things. And I had a Grant Wistrom autograph that I got at the Turkey Day games because he was a Webb City guy. So we would come up and watch the high school state championships. And he would sit in the stands and sign autographs. I mean, all game. He would just sit there and sign autographs, and I didn't have anything to get signed, so I had this ratty, like, stained white shirt, like, undershirt that I had autographed, and I kept it in a Ziploc bag in my closet. It's probably still in my childhood bedroom. Kept it there for, and I thought it was, like, the coolest thing ever. So, yeah, I was down with the Greatest Show on Turf. I think it's funny now because we're talking about the Chiefs and this awesome offense, but I mean, what the Rams were doing, they were like the first on the scene, and they did
absolutely
it for longer. They should have done it for even longer. But, man, you look at the guys that were on that team, from Orlando Pace to Kurt Warner to Isaac, and I just hope that a fitting 20-year anniversary gift would be to get Isaac in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
We're going to find out on Saturday whether or not he's in. Both he and Torrey Holt are finalists. I think Isaac will probably get in before Torrey, and the wait for Torrey will start. But, God, I just hope that the folks in the room get it right this time and that they keep this man from waiting because he wants to get in so bad. He deserves to be in. He's not going to campaign for himself. But if you the numbers alone speak for themselves, let alone his impact on the game, what he meant to receivers, how he changed that position, and the attitude that he brought to it, which was none.
The fact that he's not in now is
it's
ridiculous.
It's bogus, but we can't do anything about that now. It should be fixed this year, and that would be an awesome, awesome gift for the Rams fans. I think it's, and I'm as sour on the Rams now as anybody in the league in general, but that doesn't mean you don't celebrate that team and what it meant to St. Louis and what those guys, all those guys, really, to a man, have said, you know, St. Louis is what we're about. I mean, from Kurt to Isaac. So it should be celebrated. It should be remembered fondly. And I just love that the play that defined that team, this is what I love about that team. I'm selfish because I played defense for a very mediocre high school football team, but I've always liked defense, right? I feel like it gets overlooked. The team that had the greatest offense of all time, period, in the NFL, is most iconic play is a tackle. I love that. Mike Jones, form tackle, twisting, you know, reaching for the end zone, and he shuts it down. That's what I love about that team.
I love seeing Isaac go the distance, basically the distance, and making that catch. And it seemed like that was iconic, too, of that moment,
because
he was kind of the face of the bad, the good, the ugly of the St. Louis Rams. And he's the one that makes the catch that puts him on top for good.
Good memories.
Oh, man. I hope Isaac gets in. What do you think it'll be like? What do you think his reaction will be like?
Oh, if I have to guess, he will have a Bible verse picked out, and it will be like it was written for this day, because that's what he's always done when I've talked to him. And I don't pretend to know him as well as like JT or some of the guys who covered him, but I've, you know, had a few interviews with him now, whether it's on radio or trying to get him in, and he always has this remarkable ability to pick. And some guys do that where they throw out a verse and you're like, okay, let me look this up, and you look it up, it's like, what? This doesn't make sense. No, Isaac knows the Bible. And he will pick a verse that will, it's almost as if it was written for him in that moment. And the latest one that he picked, and I won't pretend, I won't guess the, it was a song, but I won't guess the number because I'll butcher it. But it was about promotion. And you don't need to promote yourself because, you know, God should take care of those things. And this is talking about why he doesn't advocate for himself to be in the Hall of Fame. He goes, you know, the numbers speak for themselves. And I said, well, what would you tell the guys in the room if you got a chance? He goes, I would decline to speak to them because not everybody gets that chance and I wouldn't want to have an unfair advantage. And it's like, okay, Isaac, come on, man. But he means it. And I think he feels like, you know, his numbers are there. All you have to do is look at him. All you have to do is talk to people who played against him, who played with him, who coached against him, who coached with him. And it's unanimous. There's not one person out there who has a concept of what Isaac Bruce has done, what he's meant for football, that doesn't think he should be in the Hall of Fame. Top receiver on the top offense of all time. What else needs to be said? When they go to teach these young receivers how to run routes, they teach them Isaac Bruce. The guy could run every route on the route tree. If you had to draw a route tree, you would put paint on his feet and have him go out on the field and do it. I mean, he's one of the all-time greats. And anyone who wants to knock him because, well, he played in a good offense, he was part of the reason the offense was so good. So I don't know. I've yet to find any real Isaac Bruce critics, which makes it even more preponderous that he's not in. So hopefully this is the year that gets fixed.
And then you got Oz Akeem coaching the Battle Hawks, and we'll have a future Hall of Famer from the Battle Hawks.
I love it. Yeah, yeah. Get Torrey Holt in there too. I mean, this, why not?
Are you into this thing at all?
The Battle Hawks?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, no. Here's my thing. Everyone I talk to is like, I'm going to go check it out. Dude, they're going to sell out the first game. Sold out. Now they're going to have the banners down on the upper half. But it's lower bowl, it's going to be sold out. I'll bet money on that. And it's going to be...
Really?
It's going to be rocking. Yes. Because it's an opportunity for St. Louis to show up and give two middle fingers to Stan Kroenke and to say, hey, we love football, because this city does love football. And it's going to be, they know that if they do that, it's going to show up, that it's going to get people talking. And that's, I'm telling you, man, there is an energy in this city right now. Saw it at the Winter Classic, saw it at the All-Star Game, saw it at the PGA Championship. Like, if you show up and care about St. Louis, then St. Louis is going to show up and care about you. I mean, I talk to young people, like people my age, who are like, I'm getting season tickets. I got shirts. I've got, and it's like, is it kind of like a niche thing? Are they kind of joking? Yes. But does their money count the same? Does their presence in the seat count the same? Yeah. If the team wins, they're going to pack that place. I don't know if they'll lift up the banners and go two bowls with it. That would be something. But if for what they're selling, what they're allowing, they will sell that thing out for the home opener. No doubt about it.
Interesting. All right.
You going to go?
No.
You come with me.
I'll be in spring training.
Come back home for it.
I'm good. But I
may or may not have delayed my trip to spring training to go to the Battle Hawks home opener.
Is that right?
I mean, I just want to see it.
I hope it works. I hope that football fans get what they want out of it. I'm so done with football at this point. And I never say never. I'm not saying I can't come back. And it's not the Battle Hawks problem that the NFL did what they did.
Right.
And again, I hope it works. I'm not into it like I would be if it was an NFL team or the Rams were still here. It's just not up, you know, it's just not up my alley.
I get that.
I'm waiting to see with this. I hope it works. I hope it brings in commerce, and I hope it's good for the city. I really do. And for the people that work there.
I do feel like we both have, and sorry, we're going long, but this is something I'm curious about. I feel like we both, you and I, in our conversations about the game, have much different perspectives now than we would have if we were in the weekly grind of following an NFL team. But like, I have a very hard time now not seeing an end to football as we know it. I read the New York Times, and they do these series of articles about the declining participation rate in youth teams. I mean, we're talking like...
It's massive.
Double-digit percentage.
And it's here in this town, too.
Oh, more than any, probably,
mm-hmm.
for a lot of different factors. But nationally, this is happening.
Yep.
And even in football hotbeds, this is happening. I mean, unless you have a town that has like a rich tradition, like your town's identity, your small town is wrapped up in your high school football team, then your participation rate has probably dropped
yeah.
pretty significantly. And then you look at guys like Luke Kuechly, the linebacker for the Panthers, who guys like Rob Gronkowski, who are leaving years upon years of their mileage out there to retire because they don't want to wind up, you know, wasted away when they're old. They're getting their money and they're getting the hell out. So I kind of look at it almost as like a tree where like the roots are drying up because you've got fewer and fewer people playing, and the top of the tree is shrinking because you've got some of the best blooms or whatever you want to call it falling off early. At some point that tree's going to die. Now it's a big tree and it's going to, you know, trees don't die overnight. They take a long time. But I think we're past the high point of football, of the NFL, because at some point the supply is going to dry up. At some point it's going to end up going the way of I think maybe boxing, where it's still around, but it's not mainstream like it once was. And the other thing too, and this was the newest thing I've heard on this. I was talking to a guy who played, current NFL player, and I just said, "Hey, what do you think about, you know, your kids playing?" This guy's got kids. And he said, "Oh, I know." He goes, "I don't want my kids to play football. This is a current NFL player, Dan."
Right.
And he goes, "And I would bet that 85% to 90% of the guys in the league don't want their kids to play."
But you're always going to have people playing.
And
that's
he said, "If my son wanted to play," he said, "I would make him play flag football up until he got into high school, and then I would let him play contact as a freshman." But he's like, "There's no reason for a kid to play contact football until he's in high school." I'm like, well, if the guys in the league are saying that, it's just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And it'll take a while, and there's always going to be people who will play. Like, you're not going to tell Tavon Austin, who literally pulled his family out of poverty by playing football, you give him that chance 10 out of 10, he's going to take it. But Andrew Luck, who is, you know, Stanford educated, and his dad has got, you know, all the money in the world, he might end up playing baseball. He might end up playing, you know, something else as
right.
opposed to football. I think we're going to see that shift.
Always fun. Thanks.
Sorry to end on such a negative note.
It's all good, man. We'll talk to you next Friday.
You too, man. Take care.